All right, you ready to roll?
Yes, sir.
All right. Everybody, this is the Georgia Songbirds, and we are here with Mr. Dylan Cole. And he gets a squeaky chair, which you guys have known from past episodes that I'm still building a studio. So until I get the nice stuff, we're going to keep the squeaky chair in. So introduce yourself, Dylan.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Cole. I'm out of Woodstock, Georgia, 28, country artist, and I'm really happy to be here today.
And I didn't actually meet you yet. This is the first time I got to meet you. You guys probably don't know. If you do know, I started working at Mad Life doing security. And my drummer, Patrick, also does security up there. And he said, hey, you need to get Dylan on the show. And I was like, yeah, just tell him. Come on down. I mean, this is what it's for. So how long have you been playing and writing and doing all that stuff?
Started playing guitar at 12 years old. Had no aspiration to sing whatsoever. I didn't like it. I was the long-haired lead guitarist that's, you know, just put me in the back and let me, you know, let me shred, right? Didn't really start singing until a talent show when I was about 18. There was this thing at my college, and it was, you know, you win, I think it was like $85 or something like that. You got first place. So I was like, oh, I'll go up there and for $85, I'll sing a song. Sure, right?
It's kind of what we do now.
I did, that was my first time like singing live other than like a church type deal was, it was Every Breath You Take. And I did like a mashup with that and Stand By Me, and I won first prize. And I was like, maybe I can sing okay, you know? So that's how I got started in open mics and stuff after that. Okay. And started writing a little bit towards the middle and end of college. But, yeah, that's kind of how we got started there.
So what college was it?
I went to Point University my first year of school. I was chasing the football dream pretty much, NAIA school. Then I got to Kennesaw State, and I tried to walk on there when they were getting that program going. Didn't make it, but those guys are balling out. A lot of talent over there. So, but I ended up staying at Kennesaw and just finishing out as a normal student. But enjoyed it a lot. Got out of there 2018, so it was good school.
When I was younger and I was playing football, I had the first letter I got was from Tennessee, and then I got a letter from UAB, which then stopped the program and it came back. And I wanted to go to Georgia Southern to play ball. And I remember going there and watching the practice. That's when Paul Johnson was the coach. He beat those guys up. They all came off limping in a cast. I'm like, oh my. Because I was like 5'11", 180. I thought I was, you know, I was pretty good size for a cornerback. I get to the college and these guys are 220, 240. And I was like, geez, I got to gain some weight and work out and do some more stuff.
No, it's crazy. The guys are just getting bigger and faster. I mean, you look at some of them cornerbacks in the NFL right now, and you got Sauce Gardner, 6'2", 6'3", but still running 4.3s. You know, it's just – it's crazy, the talent out there. And a lot of it out of Georgia as well. You know, it's – Georgia high school football is a whole different beast. You know, Georgia and Texas, I can't shout out them for sure. But
Oh, yeah. I remember I went – and like I said, we can get sidetracked, guys. Dylan doesn't know this, but everybody else does. We can get sidetracked. We're going to turn into a football program here for a second. I remember my senior year, like I said, I gained weight. I got 5'11", 180 to play defensive back. It's like, now that's a great size for corner in the college and moving on. Well, because it's high school, when you're 180, they put you on defensive line. At least at Cherokee High they did, because we had like 50 kids total. So they had to put you wherever you could go. So I played quarterback, and then I turned around and played defensive end. I remember the other end, to tell you the difference in how it was, he ran a 4.9. But he was he might have been like 6'2", 280. And I'm 100 pounds less and 3 inches shorter. And I ran almost as fast. I could run faster sideways, but straight line, he got me. I remember having to hit him, and the coach is like, Jesse, wrap up. I said, Coach, I can't even get my arms around the guy. How can I tackle him? Because they want you to hit up high. I was like, I can't. My hands literally will not touch.
It's so funny how they do that at the high school level. And I was at a private school for high school, so we're playing both ways. And I was like 6 foot 230, which is great. You know, fullback, linebacker, offensive, defensive line. Because that's just how it is in high school. You know, there's only so many big folks to go around unless you go to some of these 6A, 7A schools, which there's, you know, guys 6'7 on your own line. It just depends. But yeah, private school, no, you're playing both ways.
Yep. Small school here in Cherokee, we did too. They have like 80, 90 kids on the team. I'm like, wow, we literally had to play both ways because we didn't have that many kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, we literally had, I think, was 40-something people maybe. My junior year, we got a few more my senior year, but you know, you want to play everybody, but some of the kids can't play yet. They're just not there. So you're going both ways. It always reminded me of that movie, Unnecessary Roughness. Have you seen that with Sam Beckett? It's an older movie. It's a football.
I saw it a while back. Yeah, I was young.
And it's like defense and one guy comes on and the rest of them just stays.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's so you played fullback and or they moved you to line, you said.
So my senior year, and you know what? My coach, or both my coaches in school are probably going to hear this because they're on my Facebook and stuff. Shout out Chuck. Hey, coach. But so they put me at fullback like towards the end of senior year, and I averaged 12 yards a carry. So it might have been a good idea to do that earlier on, but you know, it's 10 years ago. We're not going to hold any resentment. But no, I did pretty well at fullback, and that's kind of where I stayed. Going to like the college level and stuff, I was trying to play fullback and linebacker. So they put me in like guard and defensive end, and then I thought I'd get a little taller. My dad and older brother are both 6'2", 6'3". But topped out at 6, so I was like, I ain't going to be working defensive end. You know, guys are 6'6".
Right.
Yeah,
I remember that when they moved me to defensive end, and I'm like, I want to play corner because I got bigger and I did all the tackling. I remember we did – it was a play, and this is when I got in trouble. It wasn't my fault, but the coach, the defensive back coach was Damron and Coach Key. A lot of guys probably from Cherokee know who I'm talking about. Coach Key was the defensive line coach. And so I would play a defensive play, and then they're rotating this in practice. So Coach Damron said, hey, Jesse, go to corner. All right, I go to corner. I make the tackle. I'm way out here because I saw the guy run, and I already read it. And I come flying in, and Coach Key's, Jesse, good tackle. What the hell are you doing over there? I'm like, Coach, I'm playing defensive back. No, you're in. I was like, no, this play, I'm playing defensive back. I remember that conversation. It was funny. I'm like, I'm okay staying on the field and moving back and forth. Just move me. It's a great play. It's a great ploy, but I didn't get my way.
That's usually how it goes. I hear you on that.
So, like I said, I told you, we get sidetracked. We talk football, wrestling. I could do other podcasts on this stuff too, as well as music. But we're here for your music. So, who inspired you then to kind of to pick up that guitar, start playing? And
really, both my grandpas. So, the music gene kind of skipped a generation with my family. My dad's dad and my mom's dad are both, you know, were both playing guitar and stuff growing up, singing and stuff like that. My dad's dad is more Elvis. What are those brothers? Not Everly Brothers? He loves playing their stuff. And then my grandpa was more, he's playing Eagles and Bee Gees and stuff like that. But on my mom's side. But yeah, both my grandpas were picking. And, you know, I'd see them when I was like 9 or 10 doing that. And I'm like, this looks like fun, you know, and so I wanted to play guitar. So that's kind of what got me started there. And I started on electric guitar, which I think a lot of people start acoustic, but I think it was kind of a good foundation because you get used to doing more than just GDC. And, you know, I started out playing leads and stuff. So it's a little backwards, but I think it helped me in the long run.
No, you see, I've heard that. And when I'm teaching my kids, they want to learn guitar, I'm teaching them the same thing. Start on electric. More so because it's easier to hold the strings down, 100%. And you can go ahead and learn the shapes. And then when you bring it over to the acoustic, you just have to get your hands a little bit stronger. So I was teaching them free falling because it's an easy way to do chords. You just hold the D shape and you just move your fingers around. It's good exercise to strengthen your hand. Plus, you're learning a song. My daughter, tell you how the difference in boys and girls work. My daughter, the twins, you met Cheyenne and Gibson, she was in there playing. I heard her playing some song. I walk in, like, what are you doing? She's playing Nirvana. I'm like, what happened to free falling? Oh, I got bored with it. I want to learn Nirvana. She wanted to do leads. So she's in there learning riffs and stuff on Nirvana. I was like, okay. My son, on the other hand, Gibson, is very slow and methodical. He's learning it. And he's like, why does it keep buzzing? I said, because you're not holding. I'm holding it down tight. I was like, I promise you, you're not. You'll get there. Just, it takes time.
There's so many resources for kids to learn now with YouTube and everything.
Oh, yes.
And I started learning when YouTube was starting to pop off, because I'm 28, so when I was 12, there was still some YouTube, but I just had a book that had all these different, you know, Louie, mm-hmm. Wild Thing, and then you start off with that, and then I was playing in church and youth group and stuff, too, so that teaches you a lot of the progressions, like the G, D, minor, C, you know, like the basic chords you need to get through a song, so those were kind of like the first complete songs that I was playing, and not just little snippets of them.
Yeah.
Every time I'd show my parents something, they're like, when are you going to learn the whole song? For a lot of those little riffs, but Inner Sandman, you know, stuff like that.
My first riff I learned was Stairway to Heaven.
That's starting out complex, huh?
Which, yeah, but like I said, do you want to learn, because I remember he just, do you want to learn Stairway to Heaven or it was Pink Floyd's song, what is this song called?
Comfortably Numb?
Comfortably Numb, mm-hmm. Pink Floyd, it was something, yeah. So I was like, Stairway to Heaven. And then all of a sudden, the Mike Myers stuff with the Austin Power, or not Mike Myers, and, oh, you can't play Stairway to Heaven. And I'm like, I do that every time I go. I just love that song.
Oh, yeah. They've, like, banned it from Guitar Center now. So people do that just as a joke.
I do it every time I walk in. I sit there and I play it. I care. I show you.
Oh, yeah. It's a great riff.
Yeah, I'm out of it. It is complicated. But I remember having to learn that stuff, and I still hit the. It's like you gotta stretch your hands sometimes, but that's what I love doing.
Oh yeah, I'll play Zeppelin, but I'll do that. Going to California in the acoustic room. If you know that song by them, it's one of their. It's a more acoustic track, but if you're testing out an acoustic guitar, it's a good one to do. You tune it down to like your bottom strings in D, and then the top strings in D.
Okay.
I don't even know what tuning it is, but it sounds cool.
Yeah. I call it drop D. I think there's a weird name for it, but I don't know. Did you do any
double drop D, maybe, because of both E strings or something like that. But
everybody likes double D. Who can write? Well, let's get one of your songs on. We're going to get a whole conversation going. So let's start hearing some of your music. Which one you want to do first?
So I'll go ahead and play Stuck in Calabasas. I dropped this around the holidays, end of November, and I've been promoting this single for a while, going doing interviews and stuff like that. So we'd love to play that for you guys. You can find this on Spotify or Apple Music or anywhere under Dylan Cole. It's called Stuck in Calabasas. It's the name of the song.
Now, I'm a songwriter too, so I like to hear stories. What's the story behind the song?
You know, it's funny. I heard of the town just kind of happenstance. I would think I was listening to a podcast, Fighter and the Kid, these UFC guys talking about as a podcast, but they're based out of Calabasas, and I just never heard of the town, and I was like, that's such a strange name. And I think of things all the time, like, oh, what rhymes with this? Like, if I want to write a song about it, I'll think about like towns and all sorts of stuff. And I was like, molasses rhymes with that, and somehow end up coming up with the hook. You know, I've been stuck in Calabasas, time's been moving slow as molasses, and then it all just kind of came together from there. And after the first, I wrote that first verse, I got kind of stuck, and then I actually had to go to Los Angeles for work anyway, so Calabasas is right in that Los Angeles metro area. So I kind of rode around there, and I was kind of looking for inspiration, and then I was saying, you know what, I'm going to write it like the second verse is about a completely different town. So the whole premise of the song is like a guy trying to get back home to his girl type thing. So it's like, I've been stuck in Calabasas. Second verse, you're like, I've been stuck up here in Milwaukee. Flight's delayed, so guess I'm walking, right? So it's all about just kind of a journey to get back home, which is Atlanta, obviously, in this song. But yeah, just kind of came to me. You know, it was all kind of conceptual in a way.
That's cool. So yeah, that's why I ask. I love the stories behind it. All right. But I think you're okay right now.
Okay.
Took a chance, yeah, the West Coast was calling my name. Caught a red eye from Atlanta to LA. Sunny skies all the time, looks like a rainy day. Without you, came out here for something more, something better pay, and gave it up every dime just to see your face. I want a call, but it's way too late, and I miss you. 'Cause I've been stuck in Calabasas, and time's moving slow as molasses, and all I wanna do is get back home to you. 'Cause I'm so sick of all the sunshine, the palm trees and the Hollywood sign. All I wanna do, get back home to you, to get on home to you. Took a chance, yeah, the Midwest was calling my name. To a town 100 miles just south of Green Bay. A few more months and I'll be back in the A, 'cause I miss you. But I've been stuck up here in Milwaukee. My flight's delayed, so guess I'm walking home to you. Walking home. Cause I'm so sick of all this cold beer. It's dark outside and there's too much snow here. And all I wanna do is get back home to you. Get on home to you. Now I'm all alone and I wish you were here. Why the hell did I have to fly Frontier? Hey, yeah. I'll take that Greyhound down to Georgia. Hope it don't break down before I get on home to you. Get on home. Hey, yeah. Cause I've been stuck in Calabasas. And time's moving slow as molasses. And all I want to do is get back home to you. Cause I'm so sick of all this sunshine, the palm trees and the Hollywood sign. All I want to do is get back home to you. Get on home to you.
Oh my gosh, this is why we should do, like, I don't ever do it off air, but I should always keep everything recording because we're trying to figure out the stuff for my daughter. She's bringing the 9-volt because everything is about to die on me. So you guys didn't hear that part. It was funny. That's a great song, brother.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Really, really good. Now I got to make sure everybody's adjusted back where we can hear you. Like I said, you got a deep voice, so yours will pick up pretty easy. So it worked. That's a very well written song, and the way it does sound like you're trying to get back to somebody, just going through town after town. I really dig that.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, no, it's it was definitely written over a pretty long span of time. But with that being the first single I released, I just kind of wanted everything perfect. And now we're ramping up a little bit more, where I'm trying to get you know, as much music released as I can while still maintaining quality. So I'm recording with these guys in Franklin, Tennessee, just outside of Nashville.
Okay.
So yeah,
is that where you recorded in Tennessee? Just there, yeah, shy.
Yes, sir. Yes. So that first song, I went up there in, I guess, October, and I got that recorded. It's We the People Records is the name of them.
Okay.
And they do such a great job. They're one of the best, like, full you know, full production services you can get, you know, outside of like Nashville proper. So they have a lot of guys that'll come out to their, it's kind of set up like on the outside, just like a shed on some land up in Franklin. Uh-huh. But then you go inside and it's like the most intricate setup. Like they got, you know, all the, it's a huge sound booth. You could fit, I think on that song, we had 10 guys playing when we tracked it in the studio. So, you know, mandolin, couple guitars, all that. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge facility. But you're not having to be, you know, tied to the limited amount of space in Nashville proper. So it's like all the room you could want in there on their land out there. But it's for We the People Records. I mean, shout out to them. They did a great job.
And they're probably cheaper than Nashville.
I hadn't even priced it. You know, I took, you know, the advice of somebody I knew, took him as a referral, because I've been shopping around for like the just with local guys, finding the right sound. And you know, a lot of it, I think, was just, you know, trying to do all the instruments myself, you know, was the problem. Because when you get studio guys on there, you just get years and years of experience. Mm-hmm. And you know, different techniques and things like that. Plus, like, I don't really play mandolin. I'm not a true bass player. I can slap a bass okay.
Right.
I mean, guitar picking and stuff, I'm, you know, it's fine. But they, when I got there, they were just already all set up, you know, two acoustics, two electrics. And yeah, no, they crushed it. So I was just vocals. You know, I can't even take credit for playing guitar on that recording. If you guys check that out, but I'll probably, you know, lay down some more guitar and stuff on future tracks. The main thing is that studio guys just get it right the first time.
Oh yeah,
they're in and out. That's why they can set up two or three sessions a day if they need to. They're just so proficient. So
oh yeah, I was about to say they're probably quicker. So you get them in there, it's like, okay, one, let's do another take, and we're good. That's
mm-hmm. And if they miss something, they're like, nope, run it back. And then they re-record it again, and it's like sounded even better. You know, I never heard them mess up at all. So, but no, it was an incredible experience. I'm getting back up there again in March to record a second song.
But I didn't shoot him, guys. I promise. My daughter laid the case in for the Taylor so we can get the 9-volt if it dies, and it just fell over.
I thought there was a ghost or something. I was about to run, but no, we're good.
Well, there's a family graveyard back behind the house.
Noted.
I don't ever tell anybody that, but anybody who's heard the show or been here knows it's there, because we do podcasts sometimes outside in the gazebo. Well, the gazebo is behind the house, the graveyard's behind that, and so it's behind the graveyard. So you got to go past the graveyard to get to the gazebo. And I remember, and I tell this story a lot, everybody listens to the show has heard it. Before I even started building this, that's all I had was the gazebo. So if it was cold or something, you're out there, you're sitting on your hands, you're shivering, or it's hot, you're sweating, you're doing whatever. This was October, and one of the local ladies, Allison from Life is Mary, came up to the house. Well, she came from Atlanta, but she came like around, she left around 6. So she got here like 6:30-ish, maybe 7. So, you know, in October at that time, it gets dark. So all we have for light is the computer, the Mac. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting there having a conversation, and there's stuff running through the woods, and it's freaking her out because there's a graveyard right in front of her. And she's like, Jesse, what is that? I said, it's probably a squirrel or a deer. You're okay. So, but I mean, it was funny. I laughed.
And it's October too, so that's already kind of a spooky time. Yep. So I don't know if I'd sign up to do it in a graveyard at that time. But, you know, that's cool, though. It's ambiance. Yep.
Well, I mean, if you guys look on there, when I started this, 2019, doing the podcast, I just did locals. I thought, okay, see who wants to talk to me, and then it's kind of expanded to worldwide. Now I talk to everybody. We can do digital, we can do live. But I'm like, I gotta get us up here. So I put like some red chairs, and I had like a dresser with my guitar and the computers. Great picture set up. If you guys look on the Georgia Songbirds Facebook, you'll see it. But I took the red chairs out because it was such a pain in the butt to get them up there, because I literally had to put them on a trailer to carry them up. And I was, where's the chairs? That's usually the first question they ask me. Where's the red chairs? I'm like, I can't bring them. They're too much of a pain in the butt to take all the way up there. But they will. When we come back here, guys, the studio gets built, you'll see a nice setup that'll be pretty cool, too.
Yeah. No, I'll have to come back and check that out. That sounds awesome.
Yep. I'm going to build a little fireplace right here. We're going to have some orange, reddish chairs. And then I'm going to try to soundproof the room as much as I can. It'll be fun.
Very
cool. Definitely come back for sure.
Very cool.
So what do you got going on now? Do you got any projects or songs you're talking about going into the studio? What's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So candidly, I didn't get the traction I wanted on my first single, just because I didn't do a release strategy that was really like optimal, you know, mm-hmm. because when you release a song, there's so many things you need to do to get it really out there where people can hear it.
Yeah.
So I'm super pleased with the quality of it. And then now I, on the back end, I'm trying to promote it. So this is like the second podcast interview I've done, you know, trying to promote it, playing around town as much as possible. But there will probably be like a re-release of sorts of Stuck in Calabasas just later on in the year, because what happens for local artists, y'all know this, with like Spotify, you can't really get playlisted on your first song you upload on there. It's something with their rules or guidelines. So it's probably going to be a re-release of Stuck in Calabasas, just where I can get it playlisted and get more exposure. But I've got a new single that I'm going to be going up to Franklin, the Nashville area, to record in the coming weeks. And so I'm hoping to drop that kind of around April, spring break time, because I want it to be a very much like riding around in the summertime. You know, it's going to be a more upbeat. It's called Feels Like Cheating. And it's going to be a really cool record. So I've got that, and then I've got two or three more I want to try to get done this year before it's all said and done. So we're going to be making music, in short. We're going to be just, you know, doing – I'm trying to put out three or four songs this year if I can.
Do you have a team that helps you, or do you do all this yourself?
So the folks over at We The People Records, they do some, like, artist development. They, you know, kind of walk me through, like, what – the timeline should look like. They're going to help me with release strategy. So while they're not like my management team, they provide a lot of like consultative type of services, and then also produce my records. So very helpful having them in my back pocket, and recommend them to anybody. But yeah, that's kind of my team, in short. And then my girlfriend, shout out to Jen, does all my social, like my posts and graphics and stuff like that. So she's kind of the social media team.
Yeah. You got to have a good team. There is a, like I said, when I do this, I get a lot of promoters that send me music for their artists. And I can tell you, there's one in, because we're doing the Georgia versus, I said, Pennsylvania. He's in Pennsylvania, but he has artists from all over the world. His name is Michael Stover. I can give you information. You should check him out. He will get you sit on radio stations. He'll get your numbers up, playlisted, everything. He does. That's what he does. You know, and there's other ones around too. But so anybody that's listening that knows of good promotion teams, let us know, because you're really good. I liked your playing. I liked your singing. I love the way a Taylor sounds when you don't plug it in.
That's so true. Getting the like that brightness, you know, that tinny sound out when it comes through speakers is tough. You gotta really crank the lows. You gotta really have that bass element. But unplugged, I don't know if there's a guitar that sounds better out there to me. You know.
Well, see, when you plug it into this, it doesn't bring the highs in, because I've got it into my interface, so it doesn't sound high. It sounds like what you're listening to. It just amps it. I'm like, yes, that's why I love that. I love my Ketma guitar too, but the Taylor, there's something about a Taylor that just sounds so nice. And then you plug it in, and it's so damn high. I'm like, oh, come on.
No, that's so true. And then with the mains that I use, I need to get more. The Mackie pretty much makes the best mains you can have as like a local musician setting up at bars and stuff. But I've got some Harbinger mains where, yeah, that you plug the Taylor into that, and it's just it can get a little bit on the tinny side. But the volume output is really good with Harbingers, because I set up at like Reformation Brewery down the road, and everybody can still, you can hear it from a mile away, you know, so it's one of those things. But yeah, getting the right sound is probably the toughest thing when you're a musician just playing around and you're doing your own sound and stuff, because I'm not an expert at that by any means. So I don't have like a sound guy that travels with me. It's just figuring it out, you know.
Now, do you use a looper or anything like that? I can't.
I don't loop. It's not that I don't like it. I think it's cool. I've got a lot of friends that crush it with a looper, and it adds a lot. But I'm just like, let's do it completely live. Yeah. I want every element of the show to be live.
Are you playing anywhere coming up?
Yeah. So depending on when this gets released, but I mean, I've got a show at Reformation coming up. Towards the end of February here. But basically, you want to just give me a follow on Instagram. It's just at Dylan Cole Music _ATL. I post all my gigs and when they're going to be. I've got some monthly recurring gigs that I play at Glover Park, Reformation Brewing, and Jack's Public House over in like Braselton area. So okay. I've got my monthly gigs, and then there's some I just kind of do sporadically. But, you know, I'm very, very grateful for all the spots that let me kind of have like a monthly residency over there. So that's always good.
Okay. I don't know if you have any open mics and stuff you go to. There's one in Macon Street Tacos. I don't think it's actually in Macon. I have to look. Kenny Owens. Kenny, I'm going to give you a shout out, brother, because you do a lot for this community too. It's one of the best. I've been, it's so much fun. It's easy going, you're playing, the food is delicious. I mean, the stage is very small, but it's a one-man show, you'll be fine. So if you're looking for places, and I think they always look for artists and stuff too. I have to find out exactly. It's not, they call it Macon Street Tacos, but I don't think it's in Macon. It's not quite that far.
Yeah, funny enough, when I was born in Macon, I never lived there, but I was born there, and I've only played one gig out that way at the Hummingbird. But there is a pretty good country music scene in Macon, from what I understand. So I need to kind of branch out. Macon, Columbus, Chattanooga, Rome is a really good country scene. So yeah, a lot. I just need to start kind of branching out and playing more at these places. But it's mostly been like Woodstock, Roswell, yeah, Alpharetta, that sort of thing lately.
There's some good. Them are good places too, though. It's the whole North Georgia scene is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see a lot of guys that, like, you go, like, farther in Tennessee, other places, like, they don't want to help, right? Georgia's awesome. There's so many people who, like you mentioned, Greg. Greg Shaddix, guys, you know who he is. He's helps with Mad Life. He does a lot. He helps with the with this. We're going to start doing stuff at Mad Life with the Georgia Songbirds to get artists heard. When we get it all set up, I'll reach out to you. You're more than welcome to come on and do, like, a songwriting around, do a show. We're going to start getting paid gigs for you guys, too. It's going to be a kind of audition thing first. You played there before. You may not have to, but it's going to be kind of set up that way. And then it's going to lead to actual paid gigs on the patio at Mad Life.
Oh, that's awesome. And it's, yeah, artist development's a big thing because there's a lot of talented folks out there that just don't kind of know the right steps and the right people to partner with to get their stuff heard and, you know, get exposure. So yeah. That's good that y'all are, you know, got resources for that. So very cool.
Well, there's so many people that do it, and there's different levels of how they do it. And so, you know, I mean, you'll see where they may have good intentions, but they don't have the right steps. Like I had a lady that she huge bands, but she didn't know how to do certain things on social media. And I am by no means an expert on this stuff. I'm figured out like everybody else, just thumb over fist. I'm like, okay, did that work? That's how I kind of figured out, trial by error. And it does take a team.
Absolutely. And yeah, like you said, trial by error. I mean, TikTok was kind of a necessary evil for me because I'm 28 years old. Like I'm not an old guy, but I'm not the Gen Z that's big on TikTok. And I was basically just told by a variety of people, like, dude, you need to get on there. Like, musicians do a lot better on TikTok than Instagram just because that algorithm, you know, you get discovered. So I got on TikTok, started doing just little basic covers, the same stuff I had done on Instagram, whereas Instagram has taken me a couple of years to build a following and running ads and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. TikTok, I've had it for like 2 months. I got 1,000 on there, 1,000 followers. Yep. And so running them ads and promotional things and getting people that are not just in the local area to find your stuff is the way to do it. And it started getting my streams up a little bit too slowly. So just promote. It's just kind of a necessary evil if you're not into that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I have to do that too. And I'm so, because it's so hard. People, you post a video. It's funny. You'll post a video. You'll go work hours editing, doing everything, post it, and it'll do okay. You do like a 30-second clip of a fire, and it's like, blows up. I was like, it doesn't make any sense. But you're right. You have to kind of necessary evil to promote yourself. And that's kind of where, I guess, younger people go. And I am older. I'm 46 years old. So I'm like, do I gotta do this? But yeah, you have to, because it's necessary evil.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just finding things at the right moment. So like I did a cover of Cole by Dylan Gossett. That's a big song going around. I don't know, have you heard that song?
I haven't heard that one.
Basically the premise of it is if pressure makes diamonds, how the hell am I still Cole? Is like the hook, right?
Yeah.
But it's just a real cool acoustic kind of Zach Bryan-y type vibe. And I posted a cover of that, and you know, he started kind of blowing up. And then I don't know, because if my name's Dylan as well, and and it's, you know, Dylan Cole, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if something in the algorithm got me a ton of views on that, but that was like my most viewed video I've had up into this point, you know, both Instagram and TikTok. So sometimes it's just posting things at the right moment and having the algorithm do things a certain way. So it's all just kind of a magic little science I have no idea about, but it's interesting.
See, now you mentioned something. This is going to lead to a conversation. Now, anybody that knows me, I'm not big on covers just because I can never do them justice. So if you're going to do it, you got to do it your way. I put a cover up on TikTok, Purple Rain, because I got asked. Because I always ask my guests to do a cover challenge. You don't have to if you don't want to. I'll give you a song. I'll think of it. I hear you playing, and you do it your way. And then we'll post it on TikTok, and we'll tag the artist and tag everybody and see what it does. Because, again, that's the necessary evil of it. But I remember that, and I told guests, you can always give me challenges too. I have no problem. If I give you a challenge, I'll take one back. I've had 3 people give me challenges. I did Purple Rain. One of them gave me ABBA. I don't remember the name of the song now. It was
Dancing Queen, or
no, it was like
Man After Midnight,
something at all. I have to look it up. It's like the guy from American Idol just did it. Like Winner Takes All. That's what it was. Winner Takes All.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, oh, God, this is hard. So I had to tune my guitar down to figure it out. And then I got it done. And then the guy released it from American Idol. I was like, I'm not releasing it now. There's no sense. And then another one gave me Whitney Houston. I'm like, are you serious? Have you heard me sing? You're going to give me Whitney Houston? I said, no. So I won't give anything too hard, I promise.
That happens at my gigs all the time where people will just suggest or request stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, read the vibe. I've been playing for an hour. You know what's going to be in my repertoire. They're like, you do any Dave Matthews Band? That comes up a lot for the for Gen X, you know, the 40 to 50-year-olds mm-hmm. there. And I'm like, I don't do any Dave Matthews Band. I'll throw some John Mayer in there and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's just not my – that's not really my sound. As good as they are, it'll be like that or – the Radiohead, like, that doesn't really fit into my motif. Those things come up a lot. So, yeah, some people are just like, oh, I just want to hear this. Or Alice in Chains came up the other day. I was like, dude, Rooster is my, like, one of my favorite songs ever. It's my workout. It's like, I always get pumped for that, but I don't know if I can really do that justice, right? So, right.
Well, that's why you do it your way. So, you're throwing names. I was like, okay, now you give me ideas and stuff. Like, oh, I won't give you anything too hard. I'm not going to turn around and give you, like, Cyndi Lauper, Time After Time, or something like that. I'll give you something that I think fits with your voice, because it's a deeper voice. So it's like, okay, in your country. So I always try to think of a song that will turn it to, for you, so a country deeper song. And it could be rock, it could be 80s, 90s. I'll think of it as we go.
There we go.
But let's do another song. Which one do you want to do next?
Well, I'd mentioned this, my song I'm going to go record up in Franklin here pretty soon, Feels Like Cheating. And I'll give you the premise of that. So I watch The Office a lot. And Jim, and you watch The Office at all?
I tried. I'm only in the first season. So people told me you got to give it time. It kind of grows better. So I haven't watched much, but I have seen some of it.
So the deal there, like even in the first season, you know, you've probably seen like Jim and Pam on mm-hmm. there. Well, Pam at that time is with Roy, right? But her and Jim have this weird office romance chemistry thing going on, you know, talking at the water cooler, like it feels like cheating almost, but it's not, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the premise for this song came up. It's almost like a, you know, will they or won't they, like we hadn't acted on anything, but you know, this it feels like cheating here, you know. So it's like it was kind of another just conceptual song of mine I got watching The Office, but it ends up being just kind of a good little upbeat, you know, summertime, ride around listening to it. So it's one of those that I kind of made. I was like, all right, I want this to be kind of just a quick radio hit. But it's whenever I play it out places, like, people dig it. You know, it's short, it's sweet, it's nothing too crazy. Stuck in Calabasas is a little more, I feel like there's a little more depth to it. It's like a longer song, you know, choruses change up and stuff. And this is just kind of like a fun, you know, feels like cheating whenever we're alone. You know, y'all, I'll play it for you and you can check it out. But yeah, this feels like cheating. I should be releasing this come sometime in April.
Okay. Now, it should be out by then. But it's funny you said the water cooler. That's the episode I'm on where Steve Carell moves the water cooler by his desk so he can be part of it. That's funny. All right.
Now, girl, don't look at me like that. You're the one that said we'd be friends. You practically had a ring on when I met you. I'm scared to know how this is gonna end. 'Cause I have been acted on nothing, and neither did you. So why'd you have to call me tonight out of the blue? That's when you said it already. It feels like cheating whenever we're alone. And it feels like cheating even when we're doing nothing wrong. Oh, that water cooler talk, yeah, when you pass me by, feels like cheating, 'cause now one day goes by, but you don't cross my mind. Just hope I'm not a backup plan. You keep keep on saying that it's not like that. Our eyes have been on lock since I met you. It's time to say that you made the wrong bet. Cause I have been acted on nothing, and neither of you. So why'd you have to call me tonight out of the blue? That's when you said it already. It feels like cheating whenever we're alone, and it feels like cheating even when we're doing nothing wrong. Oh, that water cooler talk, yeah, when you pass me by, feels like cheating, cause no one day goes by. But you don't cross my mind. But you don't cross my mind. It feels like cheating whenever we're alone, and it feels like cheating even when we're doing nothing wrong. Oh, that water cooler talk, yeah, when you pass me by, feels like cheating, cause no one day goes by. But you don't cross my mind. But you don't cross my mind. You don't cross my mind.
I like that. That was really good. Thanks, like man. Like I said, off. It reminded me of Bare Naked Ladies when you first started doing it. That's all I could hear in my head now with Bare Naked Ladies. So it sounds like if Bare Naked Ladies did "You're Beautiful." that's the image I got in my head right now.
It's like, yeah, that. So that with that chord pattern on there, I mess around with the key all the time, depending on like how my voice is feeling and stuff. Like today I was just coming in off of a coffee and it's like, I don't want to do it too high. I may go like slightly higher on the record, but that's usually the key I'll play it in live, and it sounds like a lot of different songs just with that pattern. So I'll hear stuff all the time. I feel like there's like some Matchbox 20 song that sounds similar. Like there's so many different ones. So it's kind of a classic chord pattern that you would use, but you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So it's just kind of a standard like country radio type of, you know, there's not too much to it. It's not too busy or anything, but people just seem to dig it when I play it live, and I get a lot of questions about when it's going to release. So that's kind of the next one on the docket. I think we'll have it ready in time for summer, and it'll be, you know, something people can ride around and listen to and have fun. So it's kind of the goal.
It made me think of that movie Yes Man when Jim Carrey's playing, "Won't you come off that ledge, my friend?"
I love that movie so much. Yes.
That's the kind of strumming pattern. Because it's very 90s sounding coming out. So you can kind of hear the rhythm of it. That's why. But it's upbeat. It's catchy. And a lot of times songwriters want to write slow, really sad songs. I get it. I write a ton of them. But sometimes you got to have a faster tempo to get the point across, and people will still listen because they can kind of tune out when it gets too slow.
You know, I'm bad about writing fast breakup songs. That one's not a breakup song, but it just reminded me. I got one called "Water Them Flowers," where it's like the premise is, "Don't forget to water them flowers I left sitting at your door." But
that's good.
But it's fast. It would sound like that song would drag you down, you know. But if you do stuff upbeat and kind of do it the right way, it still gets people going, you know. So yeah. That's one of the ones I'm excited to try to release later on in the year too. But yeah, that's a good thought.
That's a good advice for anybody listening as a songwriter, because the first thing they normally hear is the music. So if your music's upbeat, okay, they're listening, and then they'll start listening to the words, we know, but they only remember the hook. So like the water flowers hook it's a very Nashville kind of thing where it means something different than what you're saying. It's like a switch. That's really cool. I really like that. And I thought of your song. I got two songs for you. I'll let you pick. First thing I thought of was "Hinder," "Lips of an Angel." Have you ever heard that song?
Yeah, I know that song.
Have you played that song before?
I think I've jammed on it, messing around. He sings really high. I'll transpose it, but no, I know the song for sure.
Yeah, no, and I think in your voice and your style, that would work. And the second one, because the Eagles is my favorite band. You mentioned your grandfather. One of my favorite songs is "Doolin' Dalton." I love that song. So you can pick either one of those songs you want to do, "Hinder," "Lips of an Angel," or "Doolin' Dalton" by the Eagles.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm going to have to go Lips of an Angel, because even though I know so many Eagles songs, I don't know that I know that one. You said Duel and Dalton?
Duel and Dalton.
I don't know that one.
Oh, really? I have to play it for you later. It's my favorite. It's one of my favorite songs. They got the biggest hits and everything, but that's one of the better ones that I like.
Guess we're doing Lips of an Angel then. So I do, for the Eagles, I'll do like, I do Take It Easy, and then I Can't Tell You Why every now and then. But yep, I guess we're doing Lips of an Angel. It sounds like the one. Yep.
And I said, you give me a challenge, I'll do it too. I have no problem.
Absolutely. No, I might think of one right after I finish this.
Okay. And I'll play you something so you can kind of hear what I do, what I sound like. We mentioned Hurricane. I'll play Hurricane, how I blew Hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
So hit the damn space bar. Okay, there it goes. It's recording again. I freak out doing this. I don't know if you know Cannon Tyler. He's a local singer-songwriter up here.
Got him on Facebook or something.
Yeah. We did like an album review, which when you get your album done, come back. It's pretty much the same thing. You tell me stories. We listen to songs. That's it. But because I have my computer, and I guess computer years is old. It's like 5 years, 6 years old, maybe. I guess that's considered ancient. Sometimes it will stop. So you'll see me looking over to make sure that it continues to record. That's the reason why, because Candy came out here and it stopped. And luckily, it saved it, because every time I would stop it to put the song in, it would save the last time that you did it. And I didn't want to like lose the whole interview. So, but I'm with it again. I have what we call the Wheel of Death. We'll get into it as well. It's just kind of questions and stuff that aren't really music related. It's kind of just general fun questions to ask. But before we get into that, tell everybody social media stuff, all the stuff you want them to find. I want to make sure everybody gets that.
Absolutely. So for Instagram, that's where I post all my gigs where I'm playing and updates and things like that. It's just at Dylan, which is D-Y-L-A-N, the correct way to spell it, at Dylan Cole Music _ATL for Instagram. And then for TikTok, you can just do the same, at Dylan Cole Music _ATL. I think on TikTok, they give you like, they let multiple people have those names. So I think it's at Dylan Cole Music _ATL 3 on TikTok. But yeah, it's a mouthful, right? But I'll have all my you go to my Instagram, I'll have like all my links and stuff like that. I don't really do, I keep Facebook just for personal use, so I don't really post on there too much, but I'll probably start updating that after a while. Okay. And then if you just want to find me on Spotify or Apple Music, I've got Stuck in Calabasas on there now. It's just under Dylan Cole. Should be able to find that, and be sure to stream that for me if you don't mind, guys.
And when this comes out, what I do for all the guests is, I don't know if you know, we do a weekly top 10 countdown. And basically, it's 10 songs that everybody votes through, and then I premiere 4 new songs each week. And it's played like all over the world, 50-something, 60, I think 62 countries right now. But there's a couple radio stations I send it to. But what for my guest, I always bump your song up, and it'll play. And then you just get people to vote for you. You don't have to make the top number one. If you do, great. But if you last for 12 weeks, then you get a featurette with my indie radio station out of Paris. And they will play it out there as well, too. So it's pretty cool. And we want to thank Muriel for that, because she helps me with the countdown on that part of it. But I'll play your music. We'll put your whatever songs you have out. Stuck in Calabasas is out now.
Yes, sir.
We'll just send me the MP3. We'll put it there. Or if when this comes out and your new ones are out, let me know, and we'll put that.
Thanks so much. No, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely. I love different styles of music. I love everything. I've been writing forever. And anybody knows me, I'm a podcast. I am an iPod shuffle. I just will take anybody, any style. I don't care. I love listening to music. That's why when I your song choice, when I'm hearing it, I hear different things. I'm like, okay, I can go old style country like Conway Twitty, or I can go some Johnny Cash because you got a deep voice. Or I can take a song that's like rock and like, let's bring it to country, because I don't know if you listen to the Z93 now. I think it's Z93 or the River. It's a River. River is old classic rock.
Oh, 97.1, The River? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I listened to that.
They had Stone Temple Pilots on there. I'm like, that is not classic. And then I started thinking about it. Like, I guess it is.
Oh, I've heard that on the Interstate Song has been on there. Yeah. Stone Temple. And then they put Red Hot on there. The Red Hot Chili Peppers just goes on there. I'm like, no, this is 90s. That's not right. 97.1 The River. Like, yep. I was born in 95. No.
You're a year younger than my oldest. Oh, or you're older than my oldest. He's 20. Cool. He's 26. He just turned, he'll be 27, I guess, next year. So, yeah, he just turned 26 and got married.
Yeah, 29 is on the horizon for me pretty soon. So, yeah. Getting up there.
Yeah, as a old man sitting here, oh, my knees, my back. Doesn't get any better. All right, so we can go some questions on Spin the Wheel. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Got the little, I got to add that in there sometime.
Dramatic effect.
Right. What are three things on your bucket list?
Three things on my bucket list. Goodness. I want to jump out of a plane at some point. I want to get a tattoo. And I want to play the Grand Ole Opry. So one's extreme. One's, you know, I could go do that today, and then one's going to take some work.
But, yeah.
No, those are three just off the top of my head.
See, now, I thought about skydiving. I've been bungee jumping when I was like 18 years old. I went to Florida, had a good time. I like extreme sports like that. Now, because I am older, my body doesn't like it as much. Like, I decided to be smart, and this isn't a smart thing, is I took my ladder, 16-foot ladder, and I have a trampoline out back. And people can kind of see where this story is going. And I'm like, I bet I could jump from this ladder to that trampoline and be okay. All I got to do is turn. Well, I jumped. I didn't turn fast enough. I landed sideways on the trampoline, and my head bounced off the thing, and I almost knocked myself out. And my wife goes, "You're stupid. You're too old to be doing that shit. Stop."
Oh, man. Yeah, no, with the skydiving, it's one of those things. Like, I'm going to get around to it eventually. It's, you know, it's before I go, it's got to happen. And then with the tattoos, it's always like, you know, it's my mom doesn't dig the tattoos. She's like, you don't need a tattoo, you know, whatever. But eventually, I'm gonna think of something cool enough that I wanna keep on my body permanently. But which I guess tattoo removal is getting better now. But yeah, no, I've always been like, you know, I don't have any tattoos or anything. It's just something I want to do. And then yeah, Grand Ole Opry is just kind of it's kind of just like a rite of passage for folks who in country music, like. I can't think of another place. There's obviously a couple minor like equivalents to that, but yeah, Grand Ole Opry is just kind of like that spot for country musicians where it's like kind of a surreal, like I made it type of moment. So yeah. That's on the bucket list for me, and I want to try to make that happen. So that's a big one for me.
Well, I've got tattoos. I have three. That was the opening scripture at my dad's funeral. The one on my back, my cousin did because it was free. I kind of regret that one. And the one on my arm is Wile E. Coyote playing the guitar. I don't regret it, but when I got it, my ex-wife got the Roadrunner, and I wanted the coyote. She said, well, get the coyote. It's like, all right. But he's going to be doing something I like, so it's going to be music. That way, if anything happens, I can keep my tattoo and not have to get it taken off or moved over. The one on my back, like I said, was for his skull. It's got some kind of Gaelic Irish stuff on the back. Mm-hmm. And again, he was practicing. Took him 4 hours. He was digging. I was like, I'm done. I quit. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm tired of you scraping me up with a damn needle. So I left it. It's not finished. It's I could get it fixed. And I thought about if I get it fixed, I'm going to turn it into a family tree. So the top where the skull and all that, like leaf it out and then put a trunk down my spine with the lander's name. And the branches will be my kids. And then I'll put ornaments on it for when I graduate college. It will be like my oldest son. He graduated Georgia Southern. They have a Georgia Southern like Christmas ornament or something on it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, man. No, and the Wile E. Coyote tat is for you guys who can't see it. It's pretty sick. I saw you had that Wile E. Coyote binder or book, whatever that was, in here, and that's cool. I feel like that could be almost part of the brand. Like you get a Wile E. Coyote picture with some headphones on to like promote the podcast. You know, that's, yep. I could see that being cool. But
that has all my songs that are finished that are laminated. So like I have my songs laminated in there.
Very nice. No, that's a top tier Looney Tunes character for sure. Wile E. Coyote's that guy. Oh, man.
I just wanted him to eat.
Absolutely.
What's the soundtrack of your life?
Soundtrack of my life. These are some deep Wheel of Death questions. Goodness. Continuum, John Mayer's album Continuum, which I guess I feel like this is more of like an album question, right? Like you kind of have to, I feel like you have to pick an album for this.
You can pick anything you want. You can pick individual songs for parts of your life. You can pick an album, whatever. There's no right or wrong answer on these.
Okay, so two answers. Either Continuum by John Mayer, just because that's probably my favorite album of all time, mm-hmm. or if we're going just one song, Abracadabra by Steve Miller Band, just because, like, I just make stuff happen, you know? Abracadabra, that's my answer for that one.
That's the first time anybody's ever said Steve Miller Band.
I love the Steve Miller Band.
Oh, yeah. I'm a joker, midnight toker. See, my band, Yes Ma'am, was... I kind of took the John Cafferty and Beaver Brown Band image because I love rock with like guitars and saxophones. I love that kind of dichotomy of it battling back and forth. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Eddie and the Cruisers, right? He did all the music for Eddie and the Cruisers. So it wasn't him. It was John Cafferty singing and playing. And I just love that sound.
No, I hadn't seen Eddie and the Cruisers. I'll have to check that out.
It's an older movie. I say older than the 80s.
Cool.
But it's set in the 50s.
Oh, sweet.
Funny. If you had a time machine, where would you go?
This is gonna sound so petty. I'm probably gonna go to like talk to high school Dylan, like senior in high school Dylan, and probably tell him just exactly what to do to get a football scholarship. Like you need to go to these camps or contact these coaches, like. You know, and so I don't know. That's kind of one of my big regrets is just like not making the football thing happen at least for a little bit. So I'd probably give high school Dylan some advice, like don't follow your friends to school and all that. Like get you a good offer, call North Texas back. You know, one of those things. But I'd give high school Dylan some life advice. It's probably the best thing to do, both for you know academics, athletics, and then just overall. You know how to conduct yourself throughout college. So let's leave it at that. But yeah, I'd go talk to probably senior in high school Dylan. Would be a good time, good place to travel. Either that or you know to when like Jesus was alive or something and meet him, because that'd be pretty cool. But either one of those would be good. Yeah.
See, now you mentioned Kennesaw earlier. I actually got kicked out of Kennesaw, told not to come back. I got in so much trouble there because I didn't go to Georgia Southern, which I wanted to play football, but I didn't. Because I didn't have the grades, I couldn't get a scholarship. I didn't have a chance. I screwed it up because I messed around in school. That's good advice for kids. I tell my son Gibson is going back to football next year, and I told him you got to get the grades up. And we didn't have camps and stuff when I was a kid like that. Not around here. There wasn't a lot of opportunities that they have now where you can go and do drills and just learn from coaches individual, right, or in little small groups where you get more out of it. Didn't have that as when I was a kid, so I want him to do that stuff. I told him because his sister is a wrestler for the high school. This was her first year. She actually made it through to sectionals. She's only one or two freshman girls that made it. They have a girls team now, and she loves it so much. And I told Gibson, I said, you got to do that for the simple fact that in wrestling, you got to be aggressive. It's going to teach you to take somebody down. So when you're playing football, you're not going to be shy about hitting somebody and just knocking the hell out of them. Because the way they were teaching them to tackle was driving me crazy. Because they were teaching them to go behind them. I'm like, that's not how you tackle. You come across. Keep your head up. Your eyes up. That's the most important thing. You got to see what you're hitting, but you come across. And we all know that if you're chasing somebody down, you're just going to grab whatever you can and take them down. But in principle, the idea is just like, unless you can get them under the chin straight up, you come across their body.
No, absolutely. And not to get too into the weeds, but when I can get talking about sports and stuff all day.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It kind of depends on your position, like where you're at on the field, kind of the angle of approach. Like if you're a linebacker, you're head up with that running back. You need to get low. You need to get in front of them, you know, go for them legs. If you're you know, in secondary, you might be chasing a receiver down. You might have to like work on tackling from the side at kind of an angle. But you got to make it like a little bit position specific, and then also like – somebody who's 6'7" is going to tackle different from somebody who's 5'7". It's yeah. one of those things. But man, I could sit here and talk football all day, man. So that's But yeah, no, that time machine question's funny.
Because we're doing, if you guys know, we're recording this on Super Bowl Sunday, so football's coming up a little bit more probably.
Top of mind right now. Yeah. And I'm going to predict it now because we're recording this on Super Bowl Sunday. We've won 49ers by 17. I'm going to say they're going to win by 17. Let's say 21-38. I'm calling the score. If I'm right, I'm Nostradamus or something.
All right, I'm gonna go the other way because I don't think that San Francisco is gonna beat them. I wish they will. My son hates Kansas City because right now he goes Taylor Swift, and that's all we hear. And she doesn't even like football. I'm gonna go with because the defense is pretty good. It's gonna be probably a closer game than that. I think I'm gonna say 34-28 Chiefs.
All right, we've got it documented now. Yes, got to see what happens.
All right, it's probably gonna be like 6-3.
That'd be the worst. I'm hosting that party. I'm gonna be so bored trying to entertain people. 6-3. Goodness,
what commercials are coming on?
Right.
Well, we got some more questions for Will of Death, but let's get one more song in. Which one you do for your last song?
Well, I guess. Yeah, I want to play this one I co-wrote with a local musician just to keep the local music love going. So Chip McGuire, I think we talked about off air, is a good buddy of mine. Been a good mentor for me in the music world. And I co-wrote a song with him literally just over like voice memos and text. He threw a verse on there, and I was like, this is perfect because I couldn't think of a verse two for this song. Mm-hmm. So this song is called I Quit You, and it's a I think I mentioned this to you. I have some more upbeat breakup songs, and this is one of them. So it's got kind of a folky upbeat vibe, but it's basically a breakup kind of self-improvement song, if you will. Like you're doing a little bit better. So that's kind of the premise there. But it's called I Quit You.
It's funny, Chip, your ears are probably burning. We were talking about you because Chip came on a show years ago when I first started, and then I met him recently. I told him he came back up. We're going to try to write a song together, and he's going to try to come back on the show. It's just our schedules haven't came together. So Chip is a very talented local songwriter here. I know he's about to do an emo band or something. I saw that.
He's a character. He knows this. You know, it's you wouldn't expect that sound to come out of Chip like that. That gritty, you know, that gritty country, real southern sound he has. So, but Drag the Waters, his latest release, is incredible. So I encourage you guys to go listen to that. Chip McGuire, Drag the Waters. That song's awesome.
So, Chip, you want any more free publicity, brother? You got to come on.
All the free publicity you want for me, Chip.
No, all right, let's get your stuff going.
Mandarin, it'd be a whole lot better than any day I'd spend with you. I could have learned the bass, play croquet, could have stayed in bed all day. It'd be a whole lot better than any day I'd spend with you. I think of all that precious time that I spent trying to keep you happy and drinking myself sane, thinking I need therapy or that I need to change. I got my share of troubles, I ain't saying that ain't true, but I'm down to 98 problems cause I quit drinking and I quit you. Could have pursued knowledge, taught myself a trade. Could have went back to college where I could ask for higher pay. But I spent all my borrowed time giving away the one thing I can't afford to buy. But just trying to keep you happy and drinking myself sane, thinking I need therapy or that I need to change. I got my share of troubles, I ain't saying that ain't true, but put them down to 98 problems, 'cause I quit drinking and I quit you. There's no going back, it's those years are good as gone. It's no more time to waste, better get moving on. From trying to keep you happy to keeping myself sane, thinking I need therapy or that I need to change. I count my share of troubles, I ain't saying that I ain't true. Put them down to 98 problems, 'cause I quit drinking and I quit you.
And a squeaky chair makes its return. I like that song.
Thank you.
That's I don't know what made me think of Randy Newman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the Toy Story, the guys like the cowboy song, and it just made me think of him. I just see that as a Randy Newman song now. Should be on a kid's cartoon movie.
No, it's that. It's something with that key. Yeah, or with that. With that pattern there. I hear what you're talking about, like a You've Got a Friend in Me
type. Friend. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess it may be kind of black bluegrass kind of style of it, because I like, you have some really good lyrics in there. It's really good. I like
that. Yeah, and there's a chord in there that, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, that, there's a minor change where I'm like, the saying that ain't true part. Uh-huh. They do something similar to that, I think, in that song that you're talking about. So, now yeah. That makes sense. That's a good ear for hearing that.
Oh yeah, I hear some of the weirdest things sometimes. But also when I go to the studio, I've been told I have musical Tourette, because I'll put some of the weirdest instrumentation. Like, let's hear what a French horn sounds like. I still want to do a song with bagpipes. I don't know why. I don't know how. But I'm gonna do one. I'm gonna do a song with bagpipes.
It's just finding the right fit. You know.
Yeah.
I want to get some steel guitar on my neck. So that was the one thing on Stuck in Calabasas. I was like, we didn't find any way to put in steel guitar, but I want it. There's just only so many good steel players around town, is what I hear. It's a dying art form, you know?
Yes. What's his name? I know Hunter Blaylock. If you know Hunter, he's got a, I think Austin plays with him. He does steel guitar.
Nice.
It's called the Sad Machine, so he plays steel. So, again, great stuff, brother. I'm glad that I got to meet you. And I said, we're not quite done. We got a couple more questions, and we'll talk off air too. But, again, tell everybody where they can find you, your social media, all that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. So Instagram's just at Dylan Cole Music _ATL. TikTok's going to be the same thing, at Dylan Cole Music _ATL 3, because I guess there's three Dylan Cole Music _ATLs on TikTok. But that's the two spots you can find me, and then Dylan Cole on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, YouTube Music, wherever else. My distribution service has me everywhere, I'm pretty sure. So
see, now that reminded me of a question I was going to ask you. Now, have you looked, how many other Dylan Cole musicians are there?
Too many. I got tagged in something the other day. It was this guy playing in he was playing in Texas, like in front of a pretty big crowd. I think it was at Billy Bob's in Texas. Okay. So it's a decent sized venue. And then some girl tagged me on Instagram and was like, need me a country boy at Dylan Cole. But it was like some dude singing on stage in Texas. I mean, I get what she's saying. It was a good looking dude. I get what she's saying, but I was like, you got the wrong Dylan Cole. Why are you at me? I was home tonight. Like, I wasn't doing nothing like
that. And now your girlfriend's like, who is this?
Oh, for sure. But I'm like, hey, I don't know. She tagged the wrong Dylan Cole. They're in Texas. That ain't nothing to do with me. But there's a few of them. If you look on like Spotify and stuff, there's plenty of Dylan Coles, but it is my first and middle name. So that's just kind of the stage name I decided to go by, but I feel like it sticks. It works, you know? Yep.
See, it's funny. I've said this before, is I want to do like a festival. I want to start our own festival, and I want to call my band the Yes Ma'am Jam Festival. And the first festival that I'm going to do is every band I can find is called Yes Ma'am, because I didn't realize how many there were. We're the only one that spells it with like the M.A.M, you know, because it stands for middle aged men. The other ones spell it the right way. And I'm like, I want to have a Yes Ma'am Festival and invite every Yes Ma'am band to this festival for the first one, and then do it. So we have like a Dylan Cole Festival and a Yes Ma'am Festival.
That's an awesome idea. And then I got to put this out there so I follow through with it. So I don't know if you've seen this for like Groundhog Day. We just had Groundhog Day recently. Mm-hmm. Like, they do a whole big thing up in Pennsylvania. So I was thinking, what about Hog Fest in Woodstock? you have like a big music festival for Groundhog Day. Maybe turn it into a motorcycle thing too. But, you know, then we do the whole Groundhog celebration. I'm just saying something to do for next year. I'm thinking about just starting up, because you can it's kind of like a fraternity deal with the Groundhog people. Like, you can start your own chapter of whatever they do in Pennsylvania for Groundhog Day. You can pay like $30 and start one. So I might do that. I got to get that going, and I got to get ordained online too. I'm about to marry somebody in June.
Are you really?
Yeah, it's one of those where they asked me to do it the other night, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm getting ordained. Like, so I'm about to be the guy, you know, having them say the I do's and stuff. So that'll be fun.
My bassist is ordained. He got ordained because he used to work at Timbertown, and they wanted him to do a marriage. So he got ordained. So my bassist, Jordan, if you're listening, is an ordained minister too.
Yeah, I always thought my younger brother would be the first one to get ordained. He does. He leads worship at a church, and he's a great musician. But that's what he does, you know, 2-3 days a week. And so I figured he'd get ordained before me. But I guess, you know, I'll go ahead and do that. You know, I'm honored to do that for them on their big day. So that'd be really cool in June. But yeah, I got to get on that.
Yep. Now we got some more questions for Will of Death. But I wanted to ask, because you're local. Do you have any? Have you heard anybody local around that you're really digging?
Okay, so I mean, I've got my close friends, obviously, with the Relics that you had on here before. My buddy Joseph Piper, those, you know, incredible musicians over there. Obviously, I already shouted out Chip McGuire. There's a dude I ain't seen him play in a while, but the first time I saw him play, I was just like, wow. This fella Derek Gentry, who I used to see him play at like open mics and stuff, and you know, not to put him on blast or nothing, but man, that he's a talented fella. I don't even know him that well, but I saw him play out, and so I'd like to hear more out of him. CW Smith is another dude who's killing it.
He's
killing it. So every time I hear him play, I love hearing his stuff. He does some great covers, great originals. But there's so many folks in this in this local music scene that really, really got it going. If Harrison Bounds is another dude, he does more like loopers and he raps on his songs. He can get a crowd going. He's more of a it's a upbeat, like if it's a party type gig, he's the guy. So he's a good buddy of mine too. So yeah, there's plenty of. Oh, and Garrett Wheeler, I can't not shout out Garrett Wheeler. It's hilarious. His merch is all "Who the hell is Garrett Wheeler? But yeah, no, his stuff is awesome. And for being such a young guy, like, he's got like an old soul in his voice, yeah. And he's just a talented dude. But yeah, there's some of those folks locally that are really crushing it right now.
Yeah. I remember Garrett came up to the house, to the gazebo, because he rides motorcycles. He used to ride his guitar in his back. Mm-hmm. And I used to ride before when I had kids. I ended up selling my motorcycle and get a truck for work. So I don't know if I'd ride my motorcycle with a guitar in the back. I'd love the image, but I don't want somebody to hit me and mess up my bike and my guitar.
Yeah, I've only it's kind of weird. I've only ridden on the back of a motorcycle. It was as a kid though, you know. So I've never driven one. So I'd like to own one at some point, but you know, it's not the most economical for musicians, you know, and I got to carry around a bunch of gear and stuff. So I need a truck before I get that.
So mine now is I'm going to get a slingshot so my wife can ride with me. So, cause she's,
those are cool.
Yeah. And I can get automatic. She can drive if I'm drunk or something. I don't have to worry about it. Plus, you don't have to wear a helmet. You can if you want. Safety first, get it. I get it, people. But you don't have to. It's not considered a motorcycle. And I found the definition of it. Somebody says, if you're not sitting over the motor, it's not a motorcycle. Because the slingshots, you know, they're in front. So, mm-hmm. Think you're in front. Yeah, because they get that one wheel in the back. So, that's mine. I was like, one day, I'm going to retire. Pull it around.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd like to get a motorcycle eventually. It'll probably be my midlife crisis purchase eventually. So, we'll see.
All right, to the Will of Death, people. A couple more questions for you. Who would play you in the movie of your life?
Chris Pratt.
I was thinking The Office. Okay, he's going to go with The Office.
I got told
Office.
I look like Chris Pratt a couple times recently, so I was like, let's go Chris Pratt. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I got Zach Galifianakis. Whatever.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know if I like that or not, but okay.
Okay.
What's the weirdest dream you've ever had?
Weirdest dream I've ever had. I see like dead relatives and stuff in dreams all the time, but really it's okay. I have a recurring dream where I'd get shot in a convenience store, and I don't know why. It's just like like I, you know, I going into gas stations late at night, I'm just kind of looking around and nervous and stuff, but like it's the same thing where I'm shopping in the gas station, I end up getting shot. So I hope it's not like foreshadowing or something like that, but you know, just got to stay vigilant. But yeah. But it's a recurring dream. It's weird, you know.
See, now I have a theory on deja vu, because deja vu, everybody gets it, I think, and it's kind of, it almost sounds like a deja vu moment, is when you catch up to your deja vu, that's when you die. And so I'm like, okay, because I had deja vu the other day, and it's like, you know, you have it and you don't think about it, and then years later it happens, and that very thing is like, oh, okay,
I'm going to get a damn Tesla and quit going to gas stations. That's about it. That sounds suspicious. I don't
You're still going to be at a gas station. You'll be plugged in right on the side over there by the Kroger gas station.
Everybody gets got at some point. So.
I had a dream one time. I've said this before, but I had a dream. This is all family land. That's my mother's house when she's alive. That's where I used to live. So I had a dream that, you know, when you have like a dream, it's so real. Like, I get up in my dream to go to the bathroom. It's a crazy way to be dreaming. So I walk in the bathroom, I turn the light on, and my dad's in there looking in the mirror. I said, "Hey, Daddy." He turns around and shoots me, and I shoot up out of bed. It was so weird, because then I had to go to the bathroom. I'm like, just peeking my head around. Ain't nobody in there, is there? And I'm kicking the light on. But it was so weird how that happened.
Yeah, there's always like, sometimes I think there's hidden meaning in dreams and stuff, and other times I think it's your brain just doing nonsense, you know?
I think that too, because every dream I've had where I died, I was shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to have like a brain aneurysm or something's going to get me. I'm going to have some kind of brain disease. That's why I'm going to die. So hopefully not. Hopefully I die of old age in my sleep. What song makes you cry?
Oh, man. That's a good question. There's a Luke Combs song, Does to Me. Have you heard it before?
I haven't heard that one.
So he's basically just, he's kind of reflecting back on his life, and he was, the first verse talks about him like getting put in at kind of in garbage time in football and like making a tackle, and like it doesn't mean a lot to you, but it does to me, you know. And then he got to go to the prom with the homecoming queen. It was just because her boyfriend had broke up with her the last week or something. He's like, doesn't mean a lot to you, but it does to me. And then he's just kind of like reflecting on his life and how he's like an average Joe, you know, but those moments were important to him. And if you just listen to it, it gets you a little choked up. So because it's not one of those, you know, I don't listen to a lot of like, you know, songs about people dying. It's like, don't take the girl, or, you know, those things like that. But yeah, definitely that song. And then Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning, the Alan Jackson one. So just because the meaning behind that. But there's a couple of them. But yeah, check out that Does to Me by Luke Combs. It's a good one.
Okay. The one that gets me every time if I'm not ready for it is Conway Twitty, That's My Job. Every time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the story of my life. When I was a kid, me and Daddy'd fight, you know. But, you know, when you're a little kid, you look up your dad, and then you get a teenager, you fight, you kind of headbutt with all the testosterone. And I want to move to California. I was like, I'm going to get away. That's it. And I'm a songwriter, so the verses just naturally fit into my life. And like I said, if I'm driving down the road and that song comes, I was like, oh, no. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Turn on some Rooster or something.
Got to. Yeah, no. Rooster will, it's like you're going to make somebody else cry, you know, if you're going to get a fight or, you know, go lift some weights or something. Rooster's that kind of song.
Yep.
It'll get you amped up. And then, but yeah, Grandpa's Never Died, too. That's another one. Riley Green. That's
Yeah, I've heard that one.
Oof, yeah. That one. It took a while before I could play that one. My grandpas are alive, but, you know, it was just, it's a tough one. But yeah, no, those are a few.
Walks on Water, Randy Travis is another one that's pretty hard to listen to.
Oof.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
See, I told you we'd get sidetracked and everything. But I want to thank you. I got one more question for you,
yep.
Dylan. I kind of use this as the last. We touched on it a little bit, but what's some good advice or the best advice that you have that you ever see that you can give to the listeners, other songwriters in general?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm 28 and trying to make it right, and so it's been kind of a long journey, and you know, I have a lot of my friends that were playing music and just kind of, you know, gave it up. It's like you're having kids and stuff, you get busy, but for one, don't stop, you know, keep going. If you're never too old to make it. You have like Jelly Roll, who's popping off at 37, 38 years old now. Like, there's so many artists that it takes a long time for people to see how, you know, talented they are. And I get it. There's like 15, 16 year old rappers who are making millions and killing it and stuff, right? Or pop artists and stuff. But, you know, just to keep going. And then one of the best pieces of advice I can say is don't be afraid to ask for advice. If you can find mentors that are, you know, doing a little bit better than in you in music as far as like exposure and where they're playing and stuff like that, like find those people who can mentor you and give you assistance with next steps, and find people who are good at stuff you're not good at. I'm terrible at social media. If I got a girlfriend who can do social media, you know, promotion, things like that. I don't do production, you know. I just play guitar and sing. So just finding people who can fill in those skill gaps where you're not so talented at those certain things, that can really make a huge difference. And it's helped me come a long way just in this past 12 to 18 months from where I was just playing open mics to releasing songs and going on cool podcasts and stuff like that.
You hear that, people? It's a cool podcast, by the way.
Coolest.
Thank you, Dylan, brother, for coming on. Really.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate y'all having me in today.
Everybody, that was Dylan Cole, and this is the Georgia Songbirds. See you guys.